Welcome to Value Through Vulnerability. This is a podcast dedicated to putting the human back into humanity, and I'm your host, Gary Turner. I'm also the founder of Hexo Change, and Hexo Change is a transformational change practice dedicated to helping you connect to yourself, to others, and to systems at large in a more meaningful way, thus helping us turn around our workplace and planetary challenges and accelerating how alive we all feel in every aspect of our lives. This track is called Kaleidoscope and was created for me personally and for Hexo Change by Peter Griffiths, one half of the amazing Mind Takeaway. I hope you enjoy this exploration and please do share it on your social platforms so we can bring more humanity to more people. Hope to speak to you soon. Welcome to Value Through Vulnerability. This is a podcast dedicated to putting the human back into humanity, and we are now boosted by Humans First. And today I'm really grateful to welcome Rena Goldenberg Lynch, who is founder and CEO of Voice at the Table, to the podcast today. So good morning, Rena.
Good morning, Gary. Delighted to be here.
Thank you so much for joining me. Look, as we get going today, would you mind sparing a couple of minutes to introduce to our audience yourself, Rena, and also, you know, how did Voice at the Table come into being?
Absolutely, yes. So I started my professional life as a lawyer out in the States before moving to London, and had been practicing law for about 20 years. And then I reached, and in the law, you might, and listeners might know, career progression is relatively automatic. You just keep going and you become more and more senior. But when you reach a relatively senior level, then you kind of have to start looking at what's next for you. And when I reached that level, I found a number of things. One was that I felt not entirely fulfilled in my career progression and what I was doing. And at the same time, at that time I was working for a bank, I realized that a lot of people around me had lots and lots to offer. And yet the company, the organization, wasn't equipped with identifying what that extra value was that the individuals had to offer, and therefore weren't able to tap into it. And I felt that as an organization, we were leaving a lot of untapped talent and motivation and engagement behind. So I wanted to do something about that. And specifically for me, it had to do also with how women did not feel that they could contribute fully in the system. So that set me on the course to setting up Voice at the Table. And Voice at the Table is a gender diversity and inclusion consultancy. So what we do, and this was now 6 years ago, what we do is work with organizations to make them more inclusive, to help them tap into that extra talent and extra motivation that individuals have that perhaps is not being asked of them, or perhaps they don't feel that they need to or want to contribute. So that's what we do.
That's brilliant. What a wonderful introduction. And what I really appreciate, Rena, that you shared there is quite often, unfortunately, people still talk about, you know, inclusion, diversity from a sort of HR lens and not a performance lens, almost in a way. And what you spoke to brilliantly there is actually what we're talking about here is actually unleashing our people's gifts so they can contribute more.
Exactly right. And I think in the world that we live today and the world of tomorrow, it's absolutely inevitable for us to be able to do that. Diversity is becoming the way that businesses will have to cope and in order to thrive. It's no longer enough to have the smartest person doing the job if that smartest person looks like the person right next to them and that person right next to them. It's more important to have people with different experiences, different perspectives, different opinions, all contribute to a decision that then will be addressed and looked at from so many different facets, and therefore be the best decision for complex issues. And to do that, that's when we need to have a culture of inclusion. So as businesses are waking up to that, they're starting to look at how can we engage and motivate and tap into the diversity of our people, not just because it's the right thing to do, but also because it's the main thing we need to do in order to progress and thrive as a business.
Brilliant. I'm going to come back to you around sort of inclusive behaviours and sort of cultures shortly, Rena. But what I'm really interested, both for myself and also our listeners today, is can you check, sort of give us a little bit of a view? How did you go from studying law into being where you are today? What was some of that journey for you, and maybe some of the courageous steps or some of the learning throughout that process?
Yeah, thank you for that question. It takes me back, of course, all the way to when I was still in at uni. I studied law in America, and in America you have to get your undergraduate degree at university before you can go to law school, which is what I did. And at that point I did the safe thing. I got myself a business degree in marketing and business administration, thinking that it was the practical one to get. And in fact, I enjoyed it, and then joined the university where I studied and worked for 2 years with international students. So it was my first exposure to, I suppose, diverse backgrounds and cultures and views. Very much enjoyed that. And in the process, I came across a man who spoke well and very much impressed me. And I could see myself as that person. And he was a lawyer helping poor people, and it felt like that's the right step for me, which is what catapulted me into wanting to go to law school and attending law school and following that career path. And when in law school, which is 3 years in the States, I was exposed to yet so many other tacits and facets to the law. And what I loved the most about the law then is to deal with people, help people finalize transactions, try to think strategically, come up with ideas and ways around complex issues. And that served me well for, like I said, 20 years or so. But in the process, like I said, I noticed that, you know, lawyers are a, shall we say, unique species, if you will. They have a very an outlook that one might say is slightly different from your everyday person. And I felt sometimes that I had something different to add that wasn't necessarily as accepted as as I had hoped. And that's when my first journey started to see other people like me who were not necessarily cookie cutter representations or reflections of whatever it is that they were working as. But I did notice that they have a lot more to contribute, and I felt like I had a lot more to contribute that was being asked of me. So that's when I started looking at options and ways in contributing. So I started mentoring a lot. I started mentoring people like me, people like that, who didn't necessarily fit the mold, the necessary mold. And a lot of that was around encouraging people like me to step into who we are and contribute with that authenticity, with courage. And when people did that, they found actually that acceptance was a lot easier to have than they had maybe originally thought they would. So they started succeeding, they started advancing, progressing. That was very rewarding to see for me. And that's when I decided that perhaps I had a different calling. And that's when the idea of Voice at the Table came about. I had 3 years where I nurtured the idea and shaped it and talked to professionals. One of my supporters here was Jane Atzer-Grant, who was my coach at the time, and she helped me shape the idea of Voice at the Table, what it would look like, what I could do. And of course, you say courageous act and learning. The idea of doing something that is an unproven path and something that may or may not be a success is a very scary proposition. And it took, like I said, 3 years for me to get behind that idea. But having people like Jane and others who have done it themselves and who have encouraged me to follow my passion, and then having obviously had the right conversations with my family to make sure I could do it, I jumped ship. I left the corporate, the comforts of a corporate career to set up on my own. And like I said, that was 6 years ago. And the learning was that it's great. It's the right thing to do something you're passionate about, to follow a path that is perhaps not as well explored as others. And because I never looked back. I love what I'm doing. I love the variety of it. I love what how I am able to energize and support people on their journeys. And I hope that I will be able to make a lot more impact than I'm already doing.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for expanding on that. And I'm really grateful you mentioned Jane as well. So Jane, thank you so much. A public shout out to you for connecting Rena and I today for this conversation. What I think's beautiful, because one of the things I sometimes have a challenge with, Rena, and I'd love you to challenge me or sort of feedback or hold the mirror up, is that we've got this, I agree with you, like this inclusion, diversity discussion is so important. Yet at the same time, sort of sometimes the great work you're doing seems to be at odds with sometimes HR owning diversity and then accidentally, innocently keeping diversity in a box. Somehow, mm-hmm. There's really a bit of a tension between sort of allowing people to step into their gifts, yet being stuck in a HR process, which is sometimes a bit box ticky. And I'm wondering what your thoughts or challenges or how are you serving this sort of whole person view and trying to sort of make sure that people are able to unleash their gifts while still making sure HR get done what they need to get done.
That is a real challenge, Gary. I think when we look at organizations and how they operate, obviously there has to be a structure in place. And what I and perhaps you are proposing that is that there is more to give to an organization than just structure. So we're essentially causing a little bit of chaos in organizations in order for the human to shine through. And that is, I think, the friction that I see at all times. So absolutely, I work with people in HR, but I tend to work with organizations who have visionary leaders who get it, who understand that this is important. And then it's about taking those messages and embedding them in any way we can through the processes that are in place. So, for instance, a lot of the thing about Voice at the Table is we have a lot of different ways in coming into an organization and meeting them where they are on their journey. And that is because it will take a different form. What a company needs or what HR system is in place or what structure is in place will differ from organization to an organization. But ultimately, what we're trying to do is reach the individuals and trying to get the individuals in teams to see how they individually can shape inclusion. So whether it's through training, whether it's through initially talks, whether it's through coaching and facilitating of the leadership team, of the HR team, it just really depends on what the appetite is, but the messages will be the same. And that's how we hope to spread, I suppose, the inclusion impact.
That's brilliant. What a wonderful answer. Thank you so much for sharing that. That really does sit with me from this, that sort of really people-centered, heart-centered approach. And I think what I'm really intrigued at the moment with this, you know, I don't want to be another podcast talking about the COVID-19 continuously.
Yes.
However, I do think there's something interesting going on, and I'd love your thoughts on this, Rena, that there seems to be an opportunity at a time of chaos, to use your word, to really accelerate this conversation, because it seems to me that belief systems that were once held dear and as truth are now being shattered overnight. Do you see that? Do you experience that in some of your conversations?
Absolutely. I think every disaster, if you will, has a silver lining, and our current situation is no different, in that it absolutely questions the process and the structure that we adhere to as humans today, as a society today, and that's what hopefully we're starting to question and recognize that there is so much more we could be doing to unleash the human and benefit from. So I think right now we are in a stage of still processing, and we're swinging from extreme to extreme. So we started, let's say the norm has been more or less for people to go into their offices to work, and now nobody's doing that, so that's the other extreme. So on top of changing the structure completely, everybody has to deal not just with the technology fallouts, but also the human aspects of them, and that's what everybody is struggling with. People are also starting to replace their connections with online connections, their daily routines with online routines, and that's causing overwhelm. So I think the pendulum has swung a bit too far at the moment and needs to be rebalanced. And as that rebalancing is happening in the months and perhaps years to come, it's going to be up to us to try and pick out the messages, the good things that are coming out of this behavior, and lead them through into that future. Make sure that people don't forget that there is a learning here, that there are things that we are doing now that can benefit us and can serve us well going forward. So, you know, I'm going to continue to talk about diversity and inclusion throughout this time, although my sense is that people are not paying attention to it right now. And that's fine, because there are lots of other priorities right now to juggle. But let's not forget the things that we've been working on and that we can now actually actualize, make them real, because we now know what it feels like. And let's carry that through into the future. So yes, opportunities, absolutely, but we have to be patient.
I'm glad you challenged me with that one, because that's my challenge at times. you know, when you can see the opportunity and go, like, come on, let's all jump on this arc. We're ready to go for a sail. But no, I think that's a really good point, is that, and you mentioned before about sort of meeting people where they're at. I think what's inspiring me, though, in what you said earlier on, Rena, as well, is that there's this, I think we've given away, and I think this is linked to inclusion as well, I think we've given away as individuals, particularly within the workplace, our power quite easily for a long time, our agency, our belief that we can make a difference and make choices that matter. How does that show up? And please do challenge me if you disagree with that. But I'm just wondering how that sort of unleashing of individual and collective contribution, how does that come up in the work that you're doing in terms of sort of embedding inclusive behavior?
Yeah, that's a great question and a great challenge as well. I think because what I'm advocating is causing a little bit of chaos, as I said earlier, it's a very uncomfortable feeling for people. So I'm saying structure, yes, but let's loosen it up. Let's shake up the framework and let's introduce a little bit of flying by the seat of your pants and doing the kind of things that perhaps we're not used to and are slightly uncomfortable with. Let's also introduce a little bit of friction into teams. Let's allow people to have different opinions and a few disagreements, because ultimately the result will be a better decision or a better outcome. But how do we do that? How do we continue to motivate and lead people who are individuals, people who have different values? To me, the answer is sticking to the purpose and the mission of the organization and the values of the organization, and making sure that every time you talk about a direction of the company or a direction of the team, that we weave in those values. This is the reason we're doing it. This is the reason you joined. And yes, your contribution is different, but it is serving the bigger mission, the bigger direction of travel of our team, our organization. So And I know that there is a school of thought in leadership schooling at the moment that is focusing on purpose, that is trying to motivate teams to focus on the actual outcome, the actual mission, the service that the organization is bringing, rather than the tools and the processes and the methodologies of getting there. This allows individuals to act more freely and to contribute in different ways, in different working styles, with different opinions. So long as it's all leading in the right direction, you'll ultimately get there. But you'll also have the benefit of people contributing in their individual experiences and identities. So that would be my recommendation. And that's how I see it working well. Where I find my proposition is very difficult to adapt is with businesses that are traditionally much more hierarchical and much more structured, like the professional services, for instance, law firms in particular. I know that world very, very well, and I can see that they are struggling because they've been working with the same business model for hundreds of years, and to propose something that is radically different is quite a difficult pill to swallow. So I know that there are lots of little sort of break off law firms that are starting to form on the fringe, that are embracing some new business models, some new ways of working, allowing their people to be more free and more individualistic. And that's working well, but only in small numbers. It's very difficult to translate the fringe into mainstream. But I think we're traveling in that direction, Gary.
That's great to hear. And it's certainly something that resonates with me. So I work within a corporate. My day job is in a corporate, and I have to give credit to our CEO. So this week we actually had, he's literally filmed it on his mobile phone. I've never seen this in 11 years with the company, Rena. From his phone, talking about the crisis, talking about that there's no jobs at risk, that we are a healthy company, but there are challenges ahead. Complete transparency, complete clarity.
And right.
Just incredible humanity and leadership.
Yeah.
Through his mobile phone. Yet we've had 11 years of polished, perfect presentations in line with the corporate branding. And that's not a bad thing. But I think what's amazing right now, again, these belief systems that we need to be seen to be perfect are being shattered and replaced with a human being having a transparent, clear communication. And you guess which one of those moved me the most, Rena?
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. I think, you know, it's that kind of leadership that gets a lot more accomplished. I call it an inclusive leader, unsurprisingly, somebody who can be vulnerable as a leader and is humble in front of others and admit to their mistakes or weaknesses and ask for help from the team, from your employees. That, I think, bonds people much more so than the polished approach. Yes, it's great to work for an organization that looks fantastic, but I think the actual results of what you get done and how you motivate people, if you can be that kind of person who acknowledges their humanity, I honestly believe and have at the very least anecdotal evidence for that bonds teams and creates followers much more strongly than just the polished hierarchical top-down approach.
Brilliant. In terms of, I'd love to explore a little bit more with you around some of these other inclusive behaviors that you see within leadership, and maybe some of the behaviors you're coaching to help organizations move from more hierarchical or maybe more traditional ways of working, Rena. So you mentioned vulnerability as one of them, and of course this is a podcast about vulnerability, so
yes.
I was really pleased you mentioned that. But what other behaviours do you see, do you experience, do you believe are important as we navigate not only today but this, you know, this fabled future of work as we do become more interconnected yet remote potentially?
Yes, so vulnerability absolutely is one of those behaviors. Vulnerability, I couple that with humility as well. They go together hand in hand. The other ones that we work on quite a lot is, unsurprisingly, empathy. And that's about understanding or standing in the shoes of another to try and understand what they might be feeling when you say something to them or when you do something. And that is a really important one. And I think regardless of where we are on the scale of how empathetic we are, there is still more room for growth. And I know I've been working on myself, for instance, and this is true for every single person, including myself. We have to keep working on those behaviors. And I've been working on developing my empathy, and I've come a long way since I started working on it. And yet I see there's more work to be done. So empathy is an important one. The other one that you will also not be surprised to hear is the ability to listen. And when I say listen, I don't just say, as in Jane's words, opportunity, waiting to speak. It's actually listening to the person, what they're saying, why they're saying it, what is motivating them, trying to genuinely understand where they're coming from. And that requires empathy. So a lot of these will be interconnected. So empathy, listening, very, very important. But also things like mitigating our own biases. There are two steps involved in this, and is the first step is understanding that every single person with a brain will be biased. That is the way our brains are wired, and there is a reason for it. And that's okay in most situations, but not in all. And to understand that sometimes our reaction to another person can be driven by an unconscious bias is very important in order to be able to test it and mitigate it. We'll never get rid of our biases, nor should we. That's the way for us to learn and go forward. But we have to be able to mitigate them, to be aware of them, and to be able to mitigate them. So those are examples of a couple of others. And there we've developed 8 of them. And I'm not going to go through all of them right now, but those are the main ones.
No, great. Well, thank you. You know, if we had more time, I would go through all of them. I'm not going to lie, Rena, but I won't do that to you today. But I'm really curious. You mentioned about empathy, and I appreciate your vulnerability to say it's something you continue to work on, as indeed we all should. What's that looked and felt like for you? When's it been uncomfortable, or maybe what surprised you as you've lent into developing your own skills around empathy?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think empathy is a very difficult thing to do. What surprised me is, and that's probably surprising to a lot of people in their own behavior, is when you think you say something or ask a question that comes from a place of curiosity and it lands as offensive or racist or sexist on the other side. And you know you did not intend to approach it from that perspective. Maybe you were genuinely curious. I remember when I was in my 20s, I had actually spent a semester in law school in London. And at that point, I met a man from Australia. And we got to know each other very well. And we became boyfriend and girlfriend. And he followed me back to the States, where I was living at the time. And in one of our excursions to one of the theme parks, we approached, I think it was one of those games where you throw the basketball into the basket, and if you score, you win a prize. And we stood next to a tall black man there. And he said, oh, you should be good at this. And I thought to myself, oh my goodness, where is this coming from? You know, that was an obviously racist question or statement for me. But for him, it wasn't. For him, he did not realize or intended to be offensive. And that's where I think the empathy becomes a little bit uncomfortable. So if you don't understand how the whatever statement you're making to another person can show your lack of understanding of their situation or where they're coming from or how they might feel, that's a very uncomfortable feeling. And I've been caught out with different, you know, different types of situations as well, where I've said something that, you know, you can sense it when there is a pause before the answer comes, where the person receiving it is processing what they are hearing and trying to identify, is this a bad or a good thing? That's when you go, I must have said something that has created an issue potentially. And the thing about that is, it's okay. It's okay for us to make mistakes. It's okay for us to understand that we are not aware of what everybody's feeling and their backgrounds. Allow yourself to make mistakes as long as it's coming from the right place and as long as the motivation is to learn and to become better at being empathetic, it's fine. And so I think in those situations where you said something that lands not as you intended, own it, own up to it. Say, I'm sorry if I said something offensive or not quite right, please help me understand what that is so I don't make the same mistake again. And that's the learning, I guess, here.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for sharing. One of mine at the moment, actually, and it's one, and again, it's me, it's called Value Through Vulnerability. The one I'm still working through even now is pronouns, you know, for transgender, you know, so that, like, it's like using the correct pronoun or, you know, even communicating my preferred pronouns and appreciating other people's. Like, yeah, I'm still working through that now. Like, for in my mind, as a sort of like, it's not a complicated thing, but it's something that, like you say, I'm a little bit wary of getting wrong. But like, if I get it wrong, as you just said, it's okay as long as I own it and just apologize or ask for clarification. But it is, but that is definitely for me right now still something I'm working through. Is that's an uncomfortable one for me at the moment. Is getting the right.
And I think you're not alone there. And I think gender has become so complicated and is, you know, rightly so, because one of the things that I've learned and that has been my learning is people are far more complicated than we give them credit for. We're so much deeper than we think we are. And so to understand how people might feel, how people would prefer to be treated, all of that is incredibly complicated. And gender is, I think we're at the very beginning of understanding what that is all about. The 50 shades or 100 shades of gender is still a journey to travel.
So, sounds like you've just created a new name for a film, Rena.
Starring Gary and Rena.
As we look to wrap up, what comes up for me really, really strongly is all the stuff we've spoken about on this conversation. Thank you so much for all this. It's really rich. There's something about slowing down. You know, I think this is part of the reset as well. You know, if we actually have time, or we create intentionally within organizational settings in particular, time to connect on a human level, to learn about each other, to really be curious about our backgrounds and our life stories, etc. I think all this stuff around inclusion becomes easier. But if we keep running at 90 miles an hour as we have been till this reset, I think, and I just wonder what your thoughts are around that in terms of is slowing down intentionally part of this journey?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think we are just racing too fast, and the pace of change is too fast. Because as human beings, we need time to adapt, and we need time to slow down and think about it. And that's one of the reasons I actually became a coach. When I first set up Voice at the Table, I became a coach as well. And it's not so much because I use it as part, I do use coaching in my business, but I don't coach other people as part of my business. But I genuinely believe that every single person can benefit from coaching. And the very simple reason is because we just do not have time to stop and think. And coaching, if nothing else, it creates that. And I think that's the important bit about slowing down. We do need the downtime. One of the habits that I've developed since setting up Voice at the Table is getting up every single morning, well, bar weekends, at 5 a.m. And that's to allow myself some thinking time so that I can sit down and think about the business, what's important, what to do, what not to do, maybe read a little bit and learn some more, the kind of things that there is no time during the day to fit in. And I have to say, now that we're all working from home and we're surrounded by other disruptions and disturbances and interruptions, like my daughter just walking into the space a second ago, All of that is a lot to juggle. And also, we constantly, our thoughts, you know, we don't spend enough time on things. You know, what is the current attention span of a human is something like 3 seconds. Yeah, that's not enough to do anything, you know. So yes, absolutely. Slowing down is a very integral part of this work.
Well, thank you for building on and expanding our conversation today, Rena. Really, really enjoyed it. Just the last thing I'd like to ask you is, what's giving you personally inspiration right now? And it could be anything. I'm just really intrigued to understand what's inspiring you at this sort of time of volatile change.
I thrive on change to begin with. So that in itself is inspiration. But again, what I think is tremendous that we see in this time is people's creativity. What I find, even the tiny little memes that make you laugh out loud that come across your WhatsApp group are amazing to me. People are so creative, and that inspires me. Every single thing that I see on social media is just amazing. And just the belief that we have so much more inside us to give is also an inspiration.
Thank you so much for sharing. Thanks for joining me today, Rena. How can people that have been kind enough to listen to us today reach out to you and connect and follow up this conversation with you?
Yeah, thank you, Gary. Well, I am, my website is voiceatthetable.com, and people can find me at Rena, R-I-N-A, at voiceatthetable.com. Thank you, Gary.
Lovely. Thanks for joining us today, and all the very best with your endeavors. Take care for now.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hello there, Gary Turner, just wrapping up this wonderful conversation with Rena Goldenberg-Lynch. What did you take away from that conversation? What's coming up for you? We'd love for you to share with us. On social media, you can find Rena's contact details in the show notes, or you can find me, Gary Turner Zero, that's G-A-R-R-Y, all one word, at hotmail.com, at Gary IP Catalyst on Twitter, or Gary Interpersonal Catalyst on LinkedIn. I'd really love to hear what you take away, or what you would challenge, or anything else that's coming up for you. A few of the big reflections for me that I'd like to share in case it's helpful. First of all, and I think this is just critically important, Rena shared that it is no longer enough to have the smartest person doing the job. If that smartest person looks like the person right next to them and the person right next to them, you know, we're just going to be developing groupthink, and we can see this across so many swathes of government, organizations. There's very little diversity, and needless to say, there's a severe lack of innovation, employee voice quite often as well. I also enjoyed Rena talking about that. I did notice that they, people performing the role, had a lot more to contribute, and I felt like I had a lot more to contribute than was being asked of me. These two points together speak directly, I believe, to the persistent and derisory, let's be honest, engagement statistics that we see coming out of Gallup year on year for the last decade or two. This is why people are getting 133 pence in the pound, to use British sterling, in terms of engagement. You know, one in three people being fully engaged. This is why. Too many smart people, inverted commas, leading organizations without the input of those around them, and too many people not feeling that they can bring more of their true selves, or not feeling that they can be heard within a psychologically safe environment. Just brilliant, brilliant insights and reasons why we need intentionally more inclusive organizations, those that Rena is looking to serve. I also enjoyed her talking about the fact that structure, yes, but let's loosen it up. Let's shake up the framework and introduce a little bit of flying by the seat of your pants, which really made me smile. And do things that we are not used to doing or are not comfortable with. So there's two really important thought leaders in my world. One is David Marquet. He joined me on episode 7, but also episode 93, I believe, to talk about intent-based leadership. And I remember one of the quotes that he shared with me back in episode 7 was, structure creates freedom. So you need enough structure for people to play up against, but you don't want too much structure that people feel constricted. And I feel Rena speaks beautifully to that comment.
Another one is actually Whitney Johnson and her work around Disrupt Yourself. And she joined me previously on the Have Courage Summit, which is also published on the Value Through Vulnerability podcast. You can find the Have Courage interview I had with Whitney. And she does a lot of work around disrupting yourself. So not just as an organization, but an individual level. How do we intentionally knock ourselves off of our S-curves of learning? And I believe that this statement from Rena speaks beautifully to both of those different angles. And that, why don't we experiment more? I ran an experiment within my work organization between 2015 and 2018. We increased sales by 6 million and gross margin by 1.5 million with exactly the same people. No, the market conditions are more or less the same and no merger and acquisitions influence. There are tons and tons of evidence as to why experimentation works, as to why loosening up the structure, as Rena said, matters, and indeed why we should be getting more uncomfortable, but within a safe environment more often. I'd love to hear your challenges on that and whatever else is coming up for you. And I think the last two things I'd like to share with you from this discussion with Rena is that she speaks about an inclusive leader, somebody that can be vulnerable and is humble in front of others, admits to their mistakes and weaknesses, and asks for help from the team. Are you comfortable saying, I don't know? Are you comfortable, honestly, saying that I don't have all the answers? I'd love to just be vulnerable, share your feedback. I'd love you to tell us where you are with that right now. And indeed, I'm actually taking on now, in case it's helpful for anyone that might be listening, I've taken on my first coaching client and I'll be looking to do more of that using the thinking environment practitioner route. It's a very intuitive route that I learned from my wonderful friend Jane at Ted Grant, where it allows you to think for yourself as yourself, free from interruption. So do let me know, drop me an email, GaryTurner0, if that's something that could be interesting for you. I think I totally believe it's why this podcast exists. We need to help each other create the space to practice, develop the muscle of saying, I don't know, because it is so unusual, again, based on the education, parental work systems that we operate within. And finally, the ability to listen. And I'm sorry to give a lot of fanboying to Rena and my mutual friend, Jane Atte Grant, one of the best listeners I know in the business. She said, Rena shares that the ability to listen, ability listening to the person, what they are saying, why they are saying it, what is motivating them, trying to genuinely understand where they are coming from and what they require, requires empathy, putting ourselves in the shoes of others. You know, you can think about the amazing work of Claude Silver as well. I was really grateful to host the Have Courage conversation with her as well, which you can find on this podcast platform. But I just think that empathy part, you know, reach out to Rena, connect with her. She is one of the most, and I shared this feedback with her after the podcast. Inclusion can come across as being quite exclusionary at times. The intent is right. The heart behind it is right, but it makes it really difficult sometimes for senior leaders to engage with the inclusion agenda because it is actually quite discriminatory. There's so many different groups fighting and vying for time. How do we create the space for senior leaders to easily access this inclusion agenda? Rena's one such practitioner. Toby Millard is another practitioner that does this brilliantly. And I think, if I remember correctly, what he said to me back on episode 95 was, how do we develop the three key messages that any CEO can speak in front of a room of people without feeling like they're going to trip themselves up or make it really difficult for them? So I just, Rena's an amazing human being. I'm grateful to Jane for the connection. There is so much insight. And I hope I've shared a little bit of extra context as well to build that insight out today. So I'm Gary Turner. Please contact with Rena Goldenberg-Lynch. And we really hope that this conversation has served you. All the very best till next time.
Really hoping that you enjoyed that exploration on the Value Through Vulnerability podcast. You can find out much more about Hexo Change at hexochangenow.com. That's HexoChangeNow, one word, .com. You can subscribe to a weekly newsletter at that website, which includes information about live stream conversations, further service offerings, blogs, but also our in-person events, of which we have multiple each year. So I really hope that you'll join us. Do connect with me, Gary Turner, on LinkedIn, and I really hope to hear from you soon.